This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Here's this play I'm talking about. Just good hustle. What is Kevin Love doing?
He's just batting it.
My goodness.
Yeah, just
that's hot.
Bogey fell down. Ball hit him. It goes out of bounds. And he's smiling about it, too.
A three.
He tripped when he tried to fan out to the corner. I'm glad he didn't hurt himself. The way that leg right off the noggin.
Come step. These scattered situations. He shot the lights out. The Pelicans trying to turn. That's a different way to defend Curry right there, is turn the power off when the Warriors have the ball.
Lights out. Wow. That's crazy.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. As we are now getting really ramped up, we got a hurricane of a playoff coming, but we're still in that like area of uncertainty. We in the South, we call it the cone of uncertainty, where nobody knows where it's going to land. And I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Adam Murray. Adam, are you a little bit topsy-turvy, cats and dogs, playing together type of situation with a lot of the playoff scenario with the new plan?
Well, there's two things. First, good riddance to the season. It had its time, and now it's time for it to go away. And number two, with all the teams, we said this from pretty much the beginning, there's no real good team. Everybody's injured. Everybody's playing G League players. There's no team that's really running away with it. Everybody's just sort of mad. Yeah, like, oh, this team's good. Yeah, but then the next game, they're starting their third string point guard. So it's just, it's been a really sort of an unnecessarily grueling season. I don't know why they picked 72 games. Like, I think they could have done less.
I think from the mathematical standpoint, because of how late they started it, when they decided they were actually going to go forward with a regular season in their own cities, they knew that 72 was going to be like the perfect scenario where the interconference opponents, like the same conference opponents, like they were going to be able to at least get three games against one another. And if you had to just only play a team from another conference once or twice, you could pull it off and only miss out on 10 games. Like, the one thing I do push back on a little bit, and I even like say this as contradictory to what a lot of people say, including myself over the years, because of the fact that we did go through that, you know, the COVID bubble for the postseason and the last little bit of the regular season, just to iron out the seedings. Like, this did feel a little therapeutic to watch a regular season, even if there were no fans and there was none of that, like, or very few fans, like at least it felt a little normal. And now we're going to get into this, into the playoffs where things still aren't exactly the same. You know, I don't know exactly where the local cities are all going into their capacity crowds, like with the loosening of the restrictions and the mask mandate getting really loosened up over the last week. I don't really know where we're at with that. We could always keep track of that. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of bigger crowds for, like, you know, the New Yorks and the Florida teams and maybe the LA teams even. The one thing I do want to ask you is this, like, the one thing that was good about the 72 games versus 82 is that because teams played three games against one another instead of four, the tiebreakers were easier. Like, do you think that maybe playing a whole 82 game stretch may have actually been more complicating for this?
No, the only reason was this was sort of simplified as, okay, you'll play the Knicks twice back to back pretty much, so let's get this series out of the way.
Like, for example, I think the Suns are playing the Spurs twice to finish the season.
Yeah, so yeah, it's just sort of convenient from that way. And but in the end, it's just sort of completely like, well, yeah, these two teams will meet in the playoffs. Yeah, they met in January. So it's just like, well, then there are two totally different teams and everything has changed. So in one way, yes. The other way, it's just sort of uneven how everything
It's very much uneven. Like, you'll see teams that haven't played each other pretty much, like, they didn't play each other at all in, like, January and February, and then they'll play each other three or four times in March and April. Like, so, yeah, definitely a little bit of a, like, especially depending on the television schedule, you know, with whatever the networks wanted when they put the schedule together and such and such. I will say this, versus Orlando, I am not going to miss 3 p.m., weekday playoff start times. That I did not like at all. Did you?
Yes.
You did? I couldn't stand it. Now in the weekend afternoon's cool. You know, everybody's off of work and it's a primetime sports night. Like, yeah. 10 straight hours of playoff basketball on a Saturday or a Sunday is kind of awesome. When you're in the middle of your work shift and, you know, the Bucks and the Magic just tipped off, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, but how many times are you going to watch the Bucks and the Magic, period? I liked it was just randomly, oh, hey, it's 3 p.m. There's some random thing going on as opposed to, yeah, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You got to wait till 8
o'clock. We're gonna delve a little bit closer into some of that as we keep going for the next week or two. We'll probably be hammering out a few of these in the next few weeks. I wouldn't say – I mean, do you want to go on a weekly basis with this stuff?
We shall see how the playoffs land and how things go.
Can you take 1 week straight of me?
Why don't you just worry about this episode? Is that too much to ask? Can we just this current one you are on, is that I didn't know this one we're currently doing is you've already looked on to the next game. This one's a complete L then? Is that what we're doing?
No. I'll say this. Let's just kind of do a little bit of a wrapping of the bow with the regular season. As most people would do, we could just kind of talk about the award categories, which is something that, you know, they always do for the NBA. And I will say this. Did you watch the Hall of Fame ceremony over the weekend?
Of course not.
You did not? It was pretty star-studded. This was the 2021 that got delayed. It had Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, and then some other ones like Rudy Tomjanovich. Kim Mulkey, who's now actually she just left Baylor to be LSU's coach, so that was kind of awkward. but the main event obviously was Kobe, and Michael Jordan sort of stood in for the induction party. He didn't speak, but he was there. You know, Vanessa, Kobe's widow, spoke on behalf. I did like the idea. Do you know how, like, I'll say this, like, you know how the NFL changed their gimmick so that they do their honor ceremony right before the Super Bowl, and, you know, the Heisman Trophy is, like a few weeks before the bowl games, and the WWE does, like, their Hall of Fame ceremony right before, WrestleMania. I did like the idea, and maybe they can consider changing this, that maybe they should just do the Hall of Fame ceremony, like, closer to the finals or the playoffs. What do you think of that?
Yeah, but the Hall of Fame is in Massachusetts, and if the playoffs are in California, it really defeats the purpose. The thing about the
this
NFL...
This year's was in Uncasville, though.
That's literally an hour. That's the other half of Connecticut. That's not far away. But the point I'm trying to make is WrestleMania Hall of Fame is... same city. The NFL Hall of Fame and the Hall of Fame game, both in the same city. This, you're not going to have the playoffs starting in Uncasville, are you?
No, but Greg Popovich was there for Tim Duncan. He actually let an assistant coach the Suns game, which was being played like right before that. Actually, Duncan, I want to say, is an assistant coach.
I think he left this year. He was last, and I think he's like, no, I don't want to do
and
this.
And he's got he's got the braids going or the dreadlocks. It was crazy, but like, you know, great for him. Amazing career. I mean, we could talk for a million hours about, you know, Kobe and Duncan and Garnett, but like, we don't have that much time. I just wanted to make point of that. It was fun for that to be different because it felt like it felt more relevant, whereas like when you have it in September and it's just this kind of on this island and you're just talking about all these great players and then it's over and then you got two more months or another month before you talk about NBA basketball again, it just kind of is weird. I just like that change of pace. The only thing about it is I don't know, like 2021, like I think it was also highly dependent on the star power. Like if it was a year where Mitch Richmond was like the headlining class, I don't think people would care. not trying to disrespect Mitch Richmond. I'm just being real. Like next year's is reportedly going to be Chris Webber.
Well, now that, you know, Chris Webber is in, he was the one person that everyone's like, oh, he should be in. He's getting snubbed every year. So now there's really not much of a case of, well, this person should be in.
Robert Horry.
But what did Horry, he was like the
Big Shot Rock.
Quintessential. Yeah, but Jake he didn't
Amith
do.
Is in the Hall of Fame and his numbers are trash.
But the thing about basketball is just like, well, it's basketball. It's not the NBA. So it's
the Memorial Hall of Fame.
So I don't like you guys. Oh, Ori, but he was just a role player. He was not. I can easily make a case against him, but now, like I don't know. It's just, you know, now unfortunately we're getting to the age where, hey, there are people I remember. These are the players I watched. Oh no, this is we can't have Paul Pierce and Chris Webber. I remember watching the Fab Four. I remember the timeout. I remember Pierce and oh crap, I am old now.
Would you have any advice for who Paul Pierce should invite to the ceremony next year or next time? As you watch his Instagrams.
You're going to make one of the Instagram jokes now.
Well, I mean, I don't know how many jokes have been made. I mean, he's living his best life. I mean, good for him. I mean, it's not politically correct, but like, it's not something that ESPN's going to be happy with. That's why they let him go. But like, hey, do your thing. Chris Webber, I guess he was in a scenario with Turner Broadcasting where they just decided to like call the whole thing off. And they're like, look, we're not going to renew your contract. And Webber said, all right, then I don't want to do the playoffs. And they just kind of met at an impasse. This comes at the same time that we just saw the announcement that Marv Albert's retiring after this. Which is like, I mean, I can't. It's not unbelievable. His age sort of lent to it, and you saw Brian Anderson doing the conference finals instead of him on TNT during the bubble because Marv Albert's age sort of factored in the fact that bringing him into a COVID-sensitive situation last fall was not going to be a great look. So I totally understand that, but you know, Marv and Chris Webber out.
Yeah, but it's one of the things. It's time for him. He's
For sure.
Like. Dick Vitale, he's terrible. You just rely on him because of his name. It's like, oh.
Even when he does the remote stuff, Marv, in the last couple of games I've seen on TNT, like, the pep is not in his step anymore. Like, it feels very superficial. Marv, I think, has always prided himself as a guy who just, he wanted to call games until his last breath. And good for him. Like, he's put in such an amazing catalog of all types of sports games, but mainly basketball. NBA basketball, and he's lent to so many great moments, particularly some involving Jordan, you know, Shaq and Kobe, like the Knicks, who he called a lot of games for. Like, I mean, just great. So, I mean, he called the game when Willis Reed walked out of the locker room. That was 1970.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like you're mentioning all these Knicks. Yeah, that was the early Knicks. That was 30 years ago. So it's just, you can't keep hanging on to that for, you know, those, it's not. Age, unfortunately, does not stop for anyone.
No, but we do have to talk about the now. So let's talk about the season that just passed, and we'll just kind of hit some of them. When it comes to these awards, some of them will be pretty self-evident. We still want to discuss it a little bit as we roll on in the segment. So let's just kind of just go by we'll just go from the top down, because I feel like there's some of them at the top are fairly predictable. Most valuable player. You know, if you look at some of the front runners, the main ones are Nikola Jokic with Denver, Joel Embiid with the Philadelphia 76ers, Giannis Antetokounmpo with the Milwaukee Bucks, Steph Curry with the Warriors, Chris Paul with the Suns. Like, which one would you put? I mean, for me, it's Nikola Jokic. But what would you say?
Well, the correct answer is Nikola Jokic. He's sort of just been in a class of his own all year. There shouldn't really be, it should just be him. And then, well, who else is it possibly? No, it's just him. But on the same point, who the most valuable player is, period, to their team, it would have to be Chris Paul, because he single-handedly has turned that culture in Phoenix around. Just him.
Are you talking about like a player carrying a team in that scenario? In the latter one that you're talking about.
In the latter, yes. Chris Paul has been.
I would say Steph Curry has carried the Warriors.
But he's carried him just through his talent. He's carried him as in he is literally putting the team on his back and move. Chris Paul has moved the franchise.
Yeah, they're so much better of a defense than they were in the past, even with Devin Booker. Like, just like night and day. Like, that to me is one of the biggest keys to
And
their
it's not
success.
Like they added anybody else, but so he obviously Jokic is the MVP. That's there's no if ands or buts about it. But
Embiid did miss a number of games. It was somewhere in the vicinity of what, like 20 to 22 games?
But something like, but it wasn't. It's still not close.
Embiid was the most dominant center. I would say Jokic was the best playmaker.
The most dominant center was Rudy Gobert because of his defense.
I mean, that's a really good thing that we.
You could say like
defensively,
oh, he was.
It's close. It's close, and we're going to talk about that in a second. Unless you want to just jump right in.
No, let's just move to right. Let's move to defense and
player of the year.
Okay. Gobert, hands down, period.
I think Embiid and Ben Simmons together as teammates, they make a case. They make a case. In fact, I'll be the contrarian and say Joel Embiid might win it.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
I would just say, hey, it's nice that he's mentioning, but Gobert should win this. It was his third time, I believe.
Yeah.
He has just been the most dominant center.
13 rebounds and just under 3 blocks a game.
Yeah, the NBA's change. It's all small ball. It's all fast. He is just doing his thing still.
That best record reward that you always see where a team with the best record always gets an award winner. Like, it's just, it's like the Oscars almost. Like, Milwaukee, like, Giannis, he won the, listen, I think Giannis was going to be in the running no matter what, including this year. But the fact that Milwaukee had such a gaudy record and the best record in the league, both in 2019 and in 2020, really helped him win that award. And I can speak to a million other examples before that. Derrick Rose in 2011, LeBron when he's with Cleveland in 2009, 2010. Like, they love to reward the best player on the team with the most wins. And this is not exactly that, because it's not an MVP award. But Gobert winning Defensive Player of the Year is sort of an olive branch. Would you agree?
He deserves it.
Okay. So
what kind of olive branch is it? It's not you're the best player on the best team, so let's give you something. It's like, no.
Yeah, I sort of formatted that like it sounded like a conspiracy theory, and it's not. But I'll just to be a contrarian, I'll say Embiid does have a chance. Like, I think he's very, very impactful on defense for Philadelphia, and that's led to their success. Rookie of the Year is interesting because, like, if you really want to look at the guys that have won Rookie of the Month, one of them in one of those months somehow is Malachi Flynn for the Raptors. I don't think that's going to happen. The three main ones, and one of them we can probably push out of the way pretty quick, are Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, and Tyrese Haliburton, who plays for the Kings. Haliburton had a really good year, but I don't think he's had the same production value as Edwards with Minnesota and Ball with the Hornets. But it gets interesting because Edwards played more games. He wasn't nearly as efficient as Ball, but Ball did have a wrist injury that knocked him out, and his shooting really slumped when he came back from the wrist injury. And it gets to the point where you really wonder, like, is this a Malcolm Brogdon Embiid situation like in 2017? When Brogdon won the Rookie of the Year because he just played more games than Embiid did.
I guess I can be talked into either way. Edwards has come along in the last 2 months. Really, sort of when they got the new coach, he sort of took off.
Mm-hmm.
And found his little niche and made his way into the starting lineup. But Ball has been, he's been good from the get-go, so I can go either way. So I know whatever I pick, you're going to be the contrarian view.
Just to give you just a very quick rundown because it's kind of close. For Edwards, it's 18 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, over 2 made threes a game, and a steal. For LaMelo, even though he played far less games, 16 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.6 steals a game. And that led rookies for – I think Ball was the second he was the second best rebounder among the rookie class behind Isaiah Stewart with the Pistons. So, like, I mean, this is a guard. Like, I mean, he had a terrific year with Charlotte. I don't want to go as far because we talked about this before. I don't want to say that he turned Charlotte around. He didn't flip the franchise. He didn't do like what Donovan Mitchell did in Utah. But he's definitely put a little bit of energy in there. Anthony Edwards, as we've discussed with Gone Fishing with Minnesota, which I really recommend everybody listen to, is that I don't think he's energized the franchise yet. He's not there, but there are moments where you're like, wow, this dude's got some game.
No, he has flashes. So I guess I'll go with Edwards just sort of.
Oh, so I talked you into it because I said Edwards is going to win it.
Yeah, I'll get talked into it. What do we got next?
Most improved player. There's actually more candidates than I think people are even saying. Like the ones that people are talking about are mainly hold on a second. Michael Porter Jr. is one. Let me see on my little list here. Julius Randle with the Knicks, who was an all-star. Jeremy Grant on a really bad Detroit Pistons team, but he did have great minutes. Chris Boucher with the Raptors. Christian Wood with the Houston Rockets. Colin Sexton with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And another one that I haven't seen on the odds, but I would say had a marked improvement in the last few months was Miles Bridges with the Hornets. So, like, where would you go with this?
We did mention this last episode, and I flipped to Randle pretty quick. Like, oh no, he's going to win it because he's an all-star. And, you know, the argument against that is, well, he had a down year the year before. That was it. He still puts up the same numbers he always kind of did.
Putting
he
up always triple doubles at the same time.
I said him first, then Jeremy Grant, and then Michael Porter Jr. would be third on my list, but I'm gonna stay in my Randle camp.
Okay, I'll say Michael Porter Jr. just because of how he has been just on an absolute tear since the Jamal Murray injury, where he started filling in that semi guard spot. I don't know. I can't really explain where he's at because he's not really the point forward. Because Jokic is the point center, but he does take shots, but he does distribute a little bit. Like he does a little bit of everything. He does a little bit of what Jamal Murray did for Denver, but it's not the same type of player. But he's just got really nice game. So I think Porter Jr. might actually come through and surprise. But Randle, I mean, all-star, multiple triple-doubles, left-handed nightmare for the Knicks. Like, he's been terrific. Maybe I'm sounding like I have a pinch of favoritism, but I do want to make a case for Miles Bridges for Charlotte. He definitely improved from year two to year three. I'll just say that for sure.
Then you will be the only one making the case for him. What do we got next?
Coach of the year. There's a variety of them here. Like, if you look at the Coach of the Month award, which they have for the different conferences, you've seen like Nate McMillan, Quinn Snyder, Doc Rivers with the Philadelphia 76ers in his first year, a number of others that I'm not thinking of. Like, do you have one that you really are, or Monty Williams with the Suns? Like, is there one that you're thinking of right now?
Tom Thibodeau, who in 3 years will wear out his team and wear out his welcome, but right now he has turned that team from a bunch of nobodies and just 2-year contract miscast into a playoff team. And surprising about that is everybody thought, you know, Obi Toppin would be on the rookie of the year talk, but he is probably the odds-on favorite for disappointing rookie.
Episode we do, you want to just shit on Obi Toppin with the Knicks.
did anybody really suspect him being nothing?
Well, just because you're the Wooden Award winner doesn't mean you're going to be like this slam dunk success. Like, I mean, it's not a guarantee. In fact, it's almost a crutch. It's like, oh, you overachieved in college. Let's see what you can do in the pros against the really athletic players. Like, I mean, it's not as simple as that, but it does happen a lot. I mean, if you look at the Wooden Award winners, like it's like Doug McDermott, Frank Kaminsky, Buddy Hield was somewhat of an exception. I thought he was pretty good when he came out. Jalen Brunson. Like, like these are guys that are good. They're okay. But, yeah, I don't think Toppin is going to be winning. I don't even remember who won this past year's one. What, who was it? Do you remember?
I don't. There was nobody good in college this year. who do you have for Coach of the Year?
Quinn Snyder with the Jazz.
Okay.
I can't remember if he won it before. I'd have to go look it up for you guys. I know for a fact Thibodeau won it with Chicago his first year there when he coached in 2011. The same yes. year Derrick Rose won the MVP.
And that's why I'm saying he'll wear out his welcome in a few years.
Sixth man of the year. I mean, slam dunk, hands down. This was over months ago. Jordan Clarkson with the Jazz.
Yeah, there's no argument. I don't know.
Actually, the next best favorite in the odds is Joe Ingles, his teammate.
Yeah, there's no, it's Clarkson. It's simple.
The only thing that's kind of funny, have you noticed D'Angelo Russell has been playing six man with the Wolves?
He is back to the starting lineup. They
did
tried
you see
to,
that though?
Yeah, he was six man. He was coming off the bench for a while. And they moved Edwards into the starting lineup. As we mentioned in the Gone Fishing, I guess the one theme we will have is all these teams had to deal with COVID-related outages and assorted injuries, and they've started playing him and Towns have both been in the starting lineup for like the past week or two now, and it's just like, well, that's sort of strange.
The other six man shout outs that you can make are, you know, the aforementioned Brunson with the Dallas Mavericks, Montrezl Harrell with the Lakers, Derrick Rose, who bounced from Detroit to becoming a six man with the Knicks, and Shake Milton with the Sixers. But I mean, Clarkson,
no. Like, Milton, if you're talking Milton and Harrell has been pretty much a disappointment in LA compared to what he did with the Clippers. Mm-hmm. So if that's the rounding out the top five, let's just give to Clarkson. And are we done with the awards for now? Or
one more that one is more out there, but it's not as sexy. But I did want to turn this into a talking point. Executive of the Year. Now, there's no, like, I don't think anybody in Vegas is running to the sports book to put a bet in for Executive of the Year. But, like, I'll give you a few of them, okay? James Jones with the Suns. Travis Schlenk with the Atlanta Hawks. Whoever is running the Knicks. Who's running the Knicks? Is it Scott Perry? Is it World Wide West? Is it Leon Rose? Who is it?
Isn't it World Wide West now?
I have no idea. I think the team president is Leon Rose. But but anyway, and then I'll give you a really funny one just as a troll. Daryl Morey with the Sixers. So do you have any, like, or can you think up of another, like Dennis Lindsay with the Jazz? Like
the LVP is definitely the Houston Rockets showrunner, because to be like, oh yeah, we made a good trade for Harden, we'll let you know how it works out in 8 years because we got the Nets pick. And
his name,
like,
is Raphael. No. His name is Raphael Stone.
He that's just a bad.
I gotta say though, his job was just once Harden had checked out, was to just stop the draft pick bleeding. Like, they had given up so many picks to Oklahoma City that they were just, their job was just, let's stockpile the draft picks so we can try to fill
in. But you can't pretend that you got a good haul. You can't be like, oh yeah, we did really good. Just be like, no, we had to dump them. Because the problem is, you dump them for Oladipo, and Oladipo's like, oh, hell no. So then you dump them for even less. So the diminishing, which we mentioned in the Gone Fishing, just the diminishing return of everything he has done. But I guess I will give, I begrudgingly to the Hawks.
Travis Schlenk. Okay.
But it's not really saying much because Capella was injured last year, and you knew when he came in that team would be different.
Atlanta, and we'll talk about them, and we'll talk about them on a later show. But, like, you know, the funny thing about Atlanta is that they really had two pivotal moments from an executive standpoint with that team. The first one was the big spending in the free agency to bring in Bogdanovich and Danilo Gallinari, along with having Clint Capella already in the fold when they got that trade from Houston earlier on. And then the firing of Lloyd Pierce and bringing in Nate McMillan, who actually really did a good job. And we could talk about a little bit about that as we get to the end of the segment about the coaches. Like, is there anybody that you would say needs to really, like, it's funny because the regular season, the last game is going to be a Sunday. So this is like going to be Black Monday coming up for some of these teams that didn't make the playoffs or are completely out of the playoffs, not even in the 10 seed area. Like, are there any coaches that you think, I mean, immediately are like, gone, see ya.
There's always going to be one surprising one, which, you know, be like, why did they get rid of him? But I don't think there's going to be many. And here's why. I'd be like, oh yeah, Luke Walton's definitely gone, but they have to now pay Luke, but they have to pay Luke Walton and a new coach for teams that made no revenue this year. They all lost a ton of money. Are you going to go pay an extra money just to have a coach sitting there? I think he might be, you'll get one more year out of him just because of his salary, of his contract.
I think you're underestimating these owners being really impatient about bad teams and wanting to get better. Like, the first reaction whenever something like that happens is get rid of the coach. Let's put in somebody the players want. I don't know. I do have an ear to the grindstone with Sacramento, so I can ask that particular person. But I don't know if the players have completely checked out on Luke Walton yet. You did see a little bit of improvement every now and then with that team, but it was not consistent.
Well, he's not a good coach, but
he's a good offensive coach.
They're saying, you know, Fox and Halliburton like him, and he's developing them well. So it's like, okay, that's something to hang on.
I think Steve Clifford for the Magic is out. Like, I mean, I think that's, you know, when we talk about the gone fishing, a lot of people are going to – we have a lot to discuss there. Dwayne Casey for the Pistons got actually one of the worst records in the league. He got an extension. I don't get that, but
– Because that roster had nothing on it. Mm-hmm. He is, you know – No, of course they're not going to be good. Of course they're going to have the worst record because look who they're putting out on the court. But much like, you know, the Nets did 5 years ago, okay, can you develop this second round pick we signed? Can you get, okay, you have, you know, Isaiah Stewart, Sadiq Bey. Can you do something with them? We know we're not going to win with those guys out there, but can they have some improvement under you? Can they do something? And I think, yeah, they kind of have. So yeah. He kind of gets the benefit of the doubt, but Orlando is just a complete mess anyway.
And the other teams that are completely out of the mix, like, I think they have guys that have either been successful and they earned a mulligan, like Nick Nurse with the Raptors, or they just got there and they're sort of year one into either a rebuild or sort of a new vision, like Billy Donovan with the Bulls. I'm Steven Silas with the Rockets. I almost can't even count that. Stan Van Gundy with the Pelicans. I would say probably not. The playoffs teams and their coaches might be a little more interesting because you see some leaks out there or some, you know, inside sources saying, you know, Mike Budenholzer, if you don't go far in the playoffs, Milwaukee's going to fire him. Nate Bjorgren, he's on borrowed time. You start hearing rumors about Brad Stevens and the fact that Jaylen Brown's out for the rest of the season and they've been on the skids. Like, that's not really helping his case. It's almost similar to what happened to Brett Brown with the Sixers. Terry Stotts, I mean, do you remember, Adam, like a month or so ago when they were on a 5-game losing streak and people were saying maybe Stotts needs to go? Like, the postseason teams, they might have some interesting coaching situations.
People are fickle, but like I said, I think when it comes down to finances this year and then with the salary cap shrinking and a lot of teams with their bloated salaries, then nobody's really there's not a bunch of shedding salaries. Even like the crappy teams have
it's difficult.
I don't see them saying
look at Chicago. They just got Nikola Vucevic in that trade.
Yeah, right. So I don't see them saying, even Orlando has $100 million of salary out there. So
right.
I can't see teams going, we need to add $5 million after losing. This might be the one year they're like, you know what? I expect midseason next year, once people start coming back and once revenues start coming back, oh yeah, there's going to be a lot of midseason dumps. But I think this year teams might be like, we can't afford to get rid of, to pay two more years of this guy.
Yeah,
and pay,
you're
like,
really
like
on
Indiana's
that.
Case, pay three more years of him.
You're really talking up that fiscal cliff with a lot of these owners with the fact that they didn't have too many fans, not as much box office and such.
Well,
but the funny thing is they already like they already grandfathered in the cap rise, so they're going to have the money to spend. It's not going to be a huge – it's not like 2016 where the new TV deal, like, jumped it up. But, like, it's still incremental. Like, they're still going to have some wiggle room to have some cap space for all these teams. It's not I get what you're saying. Like, you know, we want to be not fiscally responsible, but we don't want to overspend needlessly. So if we have a team that's not going anywhere, why fire a coach and bring in a new coach like the Pacers did? Why fire a coach, bring in a new coach, then fire a new coach and bring in a new coach?
Exactly.
But the one surprise I'll give you when it comes to the postseason, I'll just mark my words. I'm not absolutely sure, but just say I said it. Rick Carlisle is going to retire when the postseason's over.
I wouldn't be surprised if he goes, or even Pop is like, I'm done.
And Jamal Mosley is going to be the new head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. That's my call. I'm calling it right now.
All right, the PTBN Pop Experience. We got some new shows for you. Laugh in Theater returns with Jambalaya Jacob Williams joining Andy for a live watch of the Adam Sandler classic, The Waterboy.
Great movie. Is that your favorite Adam Sandler movie?
No, Adam Sandler. I gotta go with Happy Gilmore.
Okay, Billy Madison was the first one. That's my favorite. But Waterboy's great. I mean, Happy Gilmore is amazing. The Bob Barker fight scene is hilarious.
Yeah, the Waterboy is solid as well. The most recent Making Mount Rushmore has panelists Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and James Gruenberg share which TV moms and movie moms are in their respective Mount Rushmores.
I would pick Connie Britton and Friday Night Lights on that Mount Rushmore.
The Year in Pop returns with co-host Scott Crisculo and Andy Epperson and guest Jay Arsenio D'Amato and George Ribellino to discuss the news, sports, and pop culture of 1989.
That was when Batman came out. That was the Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson Batman. So I'm sure they discussed that a couple times.
Isn't Michael Keaton returning as Batman?
He is. Like, it's...
Yeah, this is everything old is new again.
The story excuses, like, interdimensional time travel and multiverses, and it's basically just an excuse to get people to see nostalgic things that they want to see in the theaters.
They're just trying to squeeze out everything from brand equity as opposed to getting new stuff out there. Pop Goes the Couch continues with James Gruenberg, J.R.C. D'Amato, and Greg Diener covering the Mighty Ducks. Game Changers, Season 1, Episode 7, Pond Hockey. Again, squeezing more out of the brand as opposed to trying to start something new. And everyone complains about everything being recycled and blah, 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 blah. It Was a Thing on TV talks about the ill-fated 2012 Munsters reboot Mockingbird Lane with the star-studded 1983 TV movie High School USA starring Michael J. Fox, Nancy McKeon, and Todd Bridges. Oh, those are... Along with, those are two separate things. I do not remember
Munsters reboot at all.
That's probably why it failed, because nobody remembers it. Battlestar in the 25th Century continues with Sean Kidd taking Scott Shiflett on classic sci-fi shows. Pop Goes the Classic carries looking at the full-length Disney animated features with Mirandia, Andy, and Steve discussing 1963's The Sword in the Stone. They are just now at the bottom of the barrel of that one.
Yeah, the Sword of the Stone is not one of my favorites. I'll say that.
Nope, and Pop Goes the Movies. Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, Andy Atherton discuss Mortal Kombat.
Which one? The 95 one or the new one on HBO Max?
Of course it's the new one. Everything, we got to squeeze out everything old and new. And the new with the popcorn chicken salad is Ben Locke, Sean Kidd, and Logan Crosland discussing 1983's Twilight Zone the movie.
All right, I got a side there. The last segment of that movie is John Lithgow thinking that there's a creature on the plane tearing up the wing of the plane. That segment scared the living crap out of me when I was a kid. Scared me to death. Never wanted to get on a plane after that.
And again, check out all the wrestling stuff with Justin and Scott doing their things. Tons of wrestling. PTBN, check it out. Rate, review, subscribe, blah, 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 blah. Back to the show.
And we're back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. We are now going to be discussing this absolute brain-melting constant paradigm shifting scenario of an NBA play-in tournament. You know, I think for regular season aficionados, which I don't think we would consider ourselves, even though we do quite a few episodes discussing the regular season, like, it is exciting to be able to have games that do matter all the way to the last drop. Like, even before the play-in, we did have scenarios like this where seeds, like, at the top of the conference, all the way at the bottom of who gets in between the 8 and the 7, like, it was determined by the last game. So this existed before the play-in, but the expansion going all the way to a 10 seed has definitely created a little bit more volatility and not being sure and trying to figure out who gets the tiebreaker here and there. I feel like the expansion has gone a little too far. I understand why the NBA wanted to do it. You get more ratings by having more games. My scenario would have just been have the 9 play the 10, the winner plays the 8 in an elimination game. But, like, look, I don't work for the NBA. This is what they decided. Like, how do you feel like it's working out for you as a fan?
It's stupid.
Why? For podcast formatting, not great, Bob. Like, not a
stupid
perfect scenario
to say it matters about the 10 seed, that we care about Washington and San Antonio, who are both terrible teams. And, well, they're doing brilliant. No, they're terrible teams. Why should they even be in it? Because they're not super terrible? Because the West, you know, the next drop-off of the Hornets, the Pelicans and Sacramento are so bad? Look, you're not completely terrible. Like, no, you should not be rewarded for being a bad team, which this is essentially doing this year. And this should not come back next year.
We can do our quick salutations for the ones that were sort of still hanging around. You mentioned the Pels and the Kings. I don't want to talk about New Orleans. Once Zion Williamson broke his finger, it was curtains. And I think everybody knew that. So we don't have to discuss them too much. The Kings, I think everybody knew they weren't going to make it. And on the East side, the Bulls, the Raptors. The Raptors, you know, it seemed like they had a little bit of hope when they beat the Lakers in Staples in a shocking upset. And then they lost like 6 or 7 in a row after that, which was just like, wow. Like, they just completely quit.
Because they're a bad team. So,
well, they are. And then the Bulls, they played okay down the stretch, but it just wasn't enough. They were too far behind. You know, you talk about the Wizards and the Bulls, and they're terrible teams. I will have to say, you know, you do have to put in a little bit of context. Like, the Wizards have played pretty well down the stretch, you know, a lot of thanks to Russell Westbrook, you know, who actually just this past week passed Oscar Robertson for the most career triple doubles. You know, we could talk about it. Just very, very quick aside, is Russell Westbrook a Hall of Fame player?
I believe so, yes.
I would say, I would still say no.
Because what would lead you to believe he's not going to do this again for another 3 years?
Well, he's not. I think physically he's not going to be able to keep up.
But he's just going to get stats and stats and stats. He'll just be one of those stats players. The Basketball Hall of Fame is just sort of arbitrary and mess.
Point aside, Wizards have actually been playing okay. The Spurs, yeah, I buy what you're selling. Like, they have not played well. They've won two games. They won two of their last 10 games. Like, not playing well.
So let's get to the East.
The East, I think there's the one that is locked solid is going to be the Boston Celtics. Now, the fact that the Celtics are in the play-in is making Boston fans nervous, like pretty depressed already. Like, they feel like, especially when Jaylen Brown went out with his wrist surgery, that, like, it's going to be the Jason Tatum show, and they're probably going to get knocked out in the first play-in game, and then they'll lose in the second one because that's just the pessimism that.
No, it's not pessimism. It's just we're done with this team. The team was terrible. The GM put together a terrible team. You know, you could have traded Gordon Hayward for Turner, but Miles Turner, but nope. Instead, well, we're going to get this exemption and trade it in for Fournier. No, it's the team. Fans are like, we're done with this team. They're bad.
Okay.
So Charlotte will beat the Celtics easily.
Let me put this as an aside, though.
The play-in game easily.
But let me put this as an aside. Look, they have Jason Tatum. Celtics have Jason Tatum. Is Kemba Walker playing well? No, he's not. I think he's on the down. I think he's on the decline. Like they're playing Luke Kornet a lot of minutes. That's scary. But like here's the thing. Look who they're going to play. They're going to play either the Pacers, the Hornets, or the Wizards. Like yeah. I think the Wizards are scary, but Charlotte has not been the same. Even after Lamelo Ball came back, Indiana's not going to have Miles Turner.
It doesn't matter. The Celtics are terrible. And if you're starting the G League players, which they've been doing and giving minutes to everybody, they are just a terrible team who goes down 20 at the half every which way. So, again, Charlotte should beat Boston easily. And then the Wizards Pacers, that is more of an interesting matchup. That could kind of go either way.
Well, the one thing that is fun about the plane is it's a one-shot deal for the 9-10 winner or for the 9-10 loser. Like if you lose that game, you literally are going fishing. You're done. Like so like that is kind of fun to see, like especially if it comes down to the Pacers and the Wizards in that very end with the 9-10 game. Charlotte, you know, they're not going to have Gordon Hayward. We already discussed Ball's injury issues. Terry Rozier has been playing okay, but they've dropped like four games or five games in a row. Like it's like it gets to a point where it's like, you know, you got to start flipping the switch on at some point so that you can have some momentum going into this. However, Adam, it is a one game scenario. It almost has that NCAA tournament feel. You know what I say is one of the most important games in NBA history, and nobody's going to remember it? It was that 2018 play-in game between the Wolves and the Nuggets, because that was the game that convinced the NBA, we can do this. We can have a game with two teams that, and this is very important to mention, aren't going to put much of a playoff impact at all, but we can get good ratings out of this because it's winner-take-all. Do you agree with that?
Who do you have? We're not doing this. We're not going to try to talk up the Wizards in any way, shape, or form, or the Spurs in the West in any way, shape, or form. This is a terrible idea. Hey, one game is good. Let's do four. No, the 9 and 10
seeds. I'm saying it's interesting because it's different. And that there's actually...
That doesn't mean it's good. It doesn't mean you're watching two good teams.
It's good for what it is. It's good for just in its own little vacuum. I do agree with you, though. Once you get out of this playing stuff between Tuesday and Thursday, which is the East games, and Wednesday and Friday, which is the West games, once we get out of that and we go into our standard 1-8, 1 versus 8, 2-7, 3-6, 4-5, yeah, these teams are probably not going to make a dent. There is one exception. We'll talk about them in a second. The East, I would probably say, I think Boston's still going to make it. I think they're going to probably win their first one and make it. And I would say that the Wizards are going to make it as the 8 seed.
Okay.
That's my call.
All right, and now the West. Well, let's just eliminate the Spurs right now because it's just a travesty that they're even in this list. This is the reason I'm against this play-in tournament because they're bad. They're not a good team. They haven't been good all year.
It's
they're
crazy
terrible.
To say that about the Spurs from a historical perspective. I know they've been doing the slippage over the years. I mean, you got to be – if you haven't been following NBA basketball for the last few years, you should know, like, the Spurs are not – it's not your granddad's Spurs. They're super young. They're inexperienced. They don't play great defense. They're actually the only losing team in this whole Western Conference scenario.
So we know they're not moving on. Let's just eliminate them immediately. So now we have the Lakers. Yes, the Lakers are—they're tired. They're injured. They're tired.
I'm just
going to
ask
you
a big question: can they win a championship being in the play-in scenario and go all the way there?
Yeah, they have no reason not to because who scares you in the top? And you know this is
so
the
you're
topic
saying
for...
a 7 seed can win the NBA championship? I don't think that's happened since the Rockets in 1995.
But it has happened in the same way. Well, nobody from a play-in has gone to the NCAA finals. Oh, look, it changed. And it's a lot different because you have LeBron and Anthony Davis who are now back. And then, you know,
yeah,
looking
LeBron's,
ahead, does anybody in the West...
LeBron's absence in the last, week or so was a little strange. I know they were talking about the ankle. Then there was some rumors that it was maybe a COVID protocol issue because Dennis Schroeder got COVID. Like, I don't know if we ever really got the real story about it. It was very shrouded.
It's very at the end of the day, I don't think they're going to say, well, we need to rest him because we need him back, and giving him a week off is the best thing for him, but
taking a week
can't
off,
say that
to win every single game down the stretch. Like, I mean, that kind of hurt him. Like one of the ones that they lost was that Raptor game. He actually played in it. Now they lost to the Clippers and the Blazers after, but you know, Davis came through, you know, with a bunch of wins against the Suns and the Knicks and a terrible Rockets team that they barely beat. Like, they had some weird wins, but they did finish strong. I'll give the Lakers credit for that. They did what they had to do. The difference is everybody else that was in that same pocket of wins and losses, they saw the same thing. Like the Portland and Dallas, they saw the same thing, and they were like, we got to win some games too. And they did. And to their credit, they did.
Yeah, but okay. With this said, let's just get into it. Lakers should win easily. They'll get the 7th seed.
Lakers win that 8-9 game. I think they win it.
So the 8-9, we're now back to Memphis and Golden State again in the rematch. I think Steph Curry will try to will his way to winning and just score 50 or 60 like he usually does. And Memphis, is the problem with them is just their youth again and inexperience. Yes, they're healthy now, which they didn't have, but again, they're still too young. And playoff Steph is playoff Steph, and he's going to go off for a ton of points.
Man, it's interesting too with Golden State because, you know, this is the like when ever since they, you know, they did their I don't want to call it a breakup because, you know, Klay re-signed and Draymond stayed. It was just Durant who really left, but like and then Iguodala, but like this is the first time we're really going to see the Warriors in the postseason with this version of it, where it's Steph Curry just basically after winning all these championships and these MVPs, now he's just trying his best to just like carry the ship. So it's interesting. The thing about Memphis, though, is that they did play in an elimination scenario, a winner-take-all scenario against Portland. They lost.
The bubble is completely irrelevant to what
it is. I know,
but
the experience
was just a weird.
I don't know, though. This experience doesn't just stay in Orlando. It's not like, oh, okay, I guess we'll just have to relearn how to win a close game because we didn't do it on our home court or we didn't do it on the road. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that stays with you. I think it sharpens the iron. So it's a very – I agree with you, though. It's a very young, inexperienced team. It's a team that's trying to learn. It's a very imperfect team. I think they're better offensively than they are defensively. But Ja Morant is – I mean, you don't want to get him going. That's the one scare for the Warriors. I will say I still like the Warriors over Memphis.
All right, so there we go. We got the Lakers and the Warriors. And with that I believe wraps up this season and this whatever play-in tournament. So any final thoughts on this season?
I'm just glad we kind of jumped in at somewhat at the halfway point, sort of with the restart of the. It was almost like we had our own restart. And now we're out of the bubble and now we're in our comfort zone.
No, it's always good to be back.
We're out of our podcast bubble, if that's
you know, we had all that time off where it was and we somehow got renewed and okay, yeah. Here we are. So it's been fun.
I don't think we got renewed. I think we got rebooted is the better version of it. Like, you remember how they had Lethal Weapon with Damon Wayans?
didn't last.
I don't even remember who the other guy was.
That's not a good comparison.
Okay, what's a better version then? Like, didn't Roseanne get big ratings until she said something stupid?
Yeah, Roseanne. This is just sort of, you know, it's still fun again, so that's always a plus. We do have Gone Fishing the second half coming up, and then we will delve into the playoffs, the first round, the real playoffs. So we'll have actual previews.
Traditional 1-8 like, or 1 through 8 playoff, like, that's really where it's at. That's when things get serious. And I would even say, I wouldn't even go further. It gets really serious once you get past the first round, because you see a lot of fakers in those, like, not Lakers, fakers in those lower seeds. And once those guys are wiped out and sent home, then you start seeing the real, like, now you start really seeing what the teams are made of. Like, you saw that in 2020 with the Bucks and the Heat. Like, you figured out, wow, the Bucks do not have an answer for Jimmy Butler and the Heat. Like, and we're all, one of those teams is going to hit this sort of like crossroads where they're just like, oh shit, like, we really need to change things up if we want to survive. And that's when it gets fun.
All right, for Andrew Reich, I'm Adam Murray. Have a good one.
Take care.